Call your attention to Genesis 45. We've already read one passage from Genesis, and we'll put these together in a few moments, I think. But let's look at 45, verses 1 through 15. Genesis 45, 1 through 15. Joseph has gone off to Egypt. And the brothers have stayed home to care for their father. Now they are facing famine and desperately in need, and they come to Egypt seeking aid. They have no idea that they land in the office of their brother Joseph, whom they sent decades earlier away, sold him into what they thought was slavery. And as it turned out, he became a leader in the Egyptian court. Genesis 45, 1 through 15. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, "Send everyone away from me." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him. They were so dismayed at his presence. And then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer, and he said, "I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God has sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children, and your children's children, as well as your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have will not come to poverty. And now your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my own mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father how greatly I am honored in Egypt and all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here.' And then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, while Benjamin wept on his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him." This is the word of the Lord for the people of faith. No matter how many times you read something like this, new things pop out to it. Just then, at the end of that, where it says, "He kissed his brothers and wept on them, and after that, his brothers talked with him." Joseph's been doing all the talking. He has welcomed them. He has encouraged them. He has tried to set aside their fears of how they were afraid Joseph would view them and how he might treat them. And at this point, after all this conversation, this speech from Joseph, he kisses his brothers, and then his brothers feel comfortable enough to talk with him, to him. Joseph was poised in Egypt to begin deliverance of God's people. But first, they would have to go through generations of slavery. The sun disappears every day. We know that the earth turns its back on the sun, that we need relief from the light, we need relief from the heat, the radiation. We have a particular privilege this week to get to picture, to get to witness an eclipse of the sun. Couldn't help but think about that as I read this passage. These brothers, so guilty, they were without hope, they were without favor. Their father was hostile with them because of what they had done with Joseph. Their father, remember, favored Joseph, made him the coat of many colors, the coat of a whole rainbow of colors, because he was the favorite son. And he was the one that these brothers harmed, perhaps killed, at least sent away. Eclipse of the sun means the light is dark. It means the light's obscured. It means something is between us and the sun. And how often do we let that happen with our relationships, where our relationships get eclipsed by something that stands between us, maybe, quite possibly, something that we can't even identify? It's going to be kind of fun to see the eclipse this week, but I'm always looking for sermon illustrations, so I tend to put theological meaning on just about everything. But as we watch it, we recognize that something stands between us. And it reminds us to think, what is it that stands between us and God? What is it? And shouldn't we always be seeking that and looking for it so that we can figure out how to eliminate it? I have a story from a few years ago, actually probably 20 plus years ago, when I was a youth minister. And I took a youth group to the Guadalupe River. Did that quite a few times, actually, to do a float trip. And it's a really wonderful opportunity for youth fellowship. We didn't use one of the big rafts where everybody's in the same boat. We used inner tubes, the big ones, that we rented there. And each person had their own little ship, so to speak, and we could sit in them and row ourselves around to different, talk to different people. It's great as a youth director. I could go around and visit with all the different groups. Some of them would get in little chains or circles together, and I'd go sit with them a while and float. It was a sunny day. We had no idea of this when we planned the trip, but as we were preparing for the trip, we learned that there was going to be a solar eclipse that day. And so we learned how to view the solar eclipse safely by using two index cards, one with a pinhole punched through it, and use that to focus the light on the other one. Now, that's how you do this tomorrow. Don't go out and look at the sun. You can look at the paper and use a pinhole. It's like an old-fashioned pinhole camera to focus the light on one solid white screen, and you'll be able to see the pattern, the image of the shape of the sun in its eclipsed form. So we took little baggies on this float trip with cards and pinholes in them and cameras, of course, but shouldn't shine a camera at the sun either. But we took those things, so we were prepared for it. And when it was about supposed to happen, we got off the river for a little while and went into this little not a restaurant, I'll call it. It was actually a club, I think. But I brought the youth group to a bar. Okay. It was midday though, so it wasn't in very full swing. But we went in there and got water to drink and some soft drinks, and there was a little porta potty outside that we got to use to catch up. But we found a good sunny spot, and we were able to look at the sun with our index cards that we'd planned for it. So we were oohing and aahing and moaning over the over the sun, the beauty of it, an amazing thing that the moon had crossed the path in front of the sun. And it was fun. We had a good time. And just before we were going to get back in the river, I went off up the hill to a little sheet metal outhouse. And, you know, I needed to stay there for a minute or so. And while I was there, standing there, I noticed that there were nail holes in that sheet metal. Somebody had used a recycled piece of sheet metal. There were tiny nail holes all over it. Somebody had had that nailed onto a roof, and then they used it as siding for the bathroom. There was no other structure to it. It was just a rustic and pretty crude structure. But I noticed that everywhere there was a nail hole in that sheet metal, there was on the other wall an image of the sun. The curve, the eclipsed sun, still eclipsed. It was now getting sort of past, but there was still a big chip out of it. And there must have been 50 of them because of all those nail holes. And by the time I wanted to explain that to anybody else, you know, it's kind of an awkward thing to say, all right, let's line up and go to the outhouse. But I told them about it, and by the time I got all that done, the eclipse had kind of passed. And so I'm not sure anybody ever really believed my story, but it was a dramatic way to view that eclipse. It's our job to reflect God's light in the world, to illuminate others, to illuminate the paths of others, to set aside the shadows and to punch holes in the darkness. It's our job as people of the light to push away darkness by reflecting God's light. That's what we're here for. That's what Joseph was here for. He had nothing but hospitality for his brothers. He loved them and wanted to share with them the resources that he had come to control. His brothers probably were suspicious. They were the ones with the evil intentions, and perhaps they would be suspicious because they would figure other people needed to be suspicious of them. Hard to build trust on suspicion. But even in the darkness, light is strong. Some of you may have been in a dark room doing some kind of photography, processing prints or developing film, or I've only done black and white photography, and that too has been many years ago. But I know this, that in the dark room, in the dark room, the best results are when it is totally dark. The darker, the better. That's the way. Because the light shows up better when it's dark. And in our world, when we have light to share, the light of Christ within us, we shine it best in the darkest of places. We shine it best wherever we are. But sometimes it's the most effective when times are the darkest. What do you shine into the world? What do you reflect? What shines through you and around you? And maybe even from you. In our text today, Joseph had every reason to reflect bitterness. He certainly had experienced the treatment. But for every ounce of hate that he might have had, his brothers would have had the same amount of guilt. They had no idea that they were going to see Joseph in Egypt. If they had, they probably wouldn't have gone. Because when they figured out it was him, they were terrified. He said, "Please come near me." And they did, trembling. And then he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But don't be grieved or angry with yourselves, because God has sent me before you to preserve life." in return for hostility that the brothers showed to Joseph, the brothers received hospitality in large form. Those words are not far apart phonetically. Hostility, hospitality, and they're polar opposites in meaning. That's large. Joseph fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. They were full brothers, those two, sons of Jacob's favorite wife, fourth one. And after that, the brothers all talked with him, with Joseph. They did their listening at first, and then they began to feel comfortable enough to speak. It was a miracle of healing and hope. See, God always makes a way. God always makes a way, and sometimes we find it. God always makes a way, and sometimes we follow it. God doesn't force His will now, but He offers it. The end time comes when that may be different. We are given a choice now. God does not force us. That would be possible. But really, in what way would that be fun for God if we had no other choice but to accept God's love? If it was done by force, it wouldn't be much fun for God to know our willing response. If love is force, it's really not love, but fear instead, right? And love that is forced quickly turns to hate. So Joseph's brothers probably hated him because of the distance between them. They despised him and they got rid of him, or so they thought. But they encountered him again in this different context a whole generation later. And this time they were the ones that were desperate. And Joseph's welcome and his embrace stunned them. "I am Joseph," he said, "your brother whom you betrayed." And Joseph embraced them and they all wept. He didn't kill them. He didn't seek revenge at all. He acknowledged that. He said, "You meant it for harm, what you did to me. You meant it for harm, but God made it good." Joseph says to his brothers, "Don't be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, and God meant it for good in order to bring it about, as it is to this day, to save many people who are alive." And God calls us to this same cause. People who are suffering, people who are separated from their families. There is no greater comparison than this about Jesus, that His life and betrayal and death and life again brought new opportunity to be reconciled with God and one another. The best line from this story is, "This son of mine was lost and now is found." The father Jacob would say that. "This son of mine who was lost is now found." And God means that for good.